Join me, Jacqueline Coley, on a brand new podcast, Seen on the Screen, presented by Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that shape them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Seen on the Screen is available now. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. It's your girl, Jacqueline, and I cannot begin to say how happy I am that we're finally going to say fair is fair. That's right. I'm with my boy, Mark Ellis, and one of my favorite people on this planet, Emily V. Gordon, current writer and producer, former therapist, and fan of the film that we're going to discuss today, The Legend of Billie Jean. Mark, I know you're very excited to talk about this one.
Okay, so I had no idea what I was getting into with this episode. And then, you know, I'm excited to have Emily on, and I assumed that she was the one that picked The Legend of Billie Jean. Then I start the movie, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is basically Jacqueline's old stomping grounds. So did you just have somebody on so that you could talk about this? Like, did you shadow pick this movie and then put it on a guest? And then the movie continues, and I'm like, oh, no, this is just something that I missed, and it's on me. It's not on you or anybody else. This one is squarely on Mark's shoulders for not having arrived at The Legend of Billie Jean sooner.
Yes, it is squarely on you for not having arrived. I will say, although Corpus is the reason why I love this film, my love of Emily and our ability to talk about it is a way bigger bonus than the city that I escaped ever could be. Anybody that knows me knows that.
I mean, column A, column B. It's a little of both, right? Why not? Why not?
Well, it's funny because I assumed that Emily, like, you know, I just met her 5 minutes ago, and I'm like talking to her, and I'm like, oh, you must be from Corpus Christi too, and that's like the connection y'all have. Nope, turns out Emily and I are from the same place.
Hell yeah.
And it's different than Corpus Christi. There's some areas that are similar, but it's like, oh, okay, we have all these different connections floating around now.
Yeah, and that's why this movie needed to happen.
100%.
Emily, thank you for being here. I mean, look, let's just go ahead and tell the tea. 39% rotten, but a 75% audience score back in 1985. I mean, one of the greatest Pat Benatar singles to ever grace the stage.
Yeah,
100%.
I will have to say I love it. And Mark, I know you did watch it last night.
Yes,
for the very first time.
I had a couple Shiner box to get into the spirit of Texas.
I mean,
I was like, is that a sponsor?
No. Look, I love Emily, like, queen of, like, you guys did Indoor Kids during the pandemic. You guys did a podcast. She is a covert podcast producer that we have basically invited into the fold today.
Well, we were having a really great conversation right before this, and I was like, why are we talking about this not on the air? What are we doing?
That's how I knew she was a pro.
Yeah. This is why I'm like, we're going to have a good episode today. But I figure normally Mark does the synopsis, but I was wondering, Emily, can you give us the basic beats of The Legend of Billie Jean? And by the way, this can be as haphazard as possible.
Oh, God, it will be.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, we don't need you to go into, like, the Criterion, okay, like, collection detailed, you know, opening the cover.
Okay, we really open on. No, just kidding. I actually didn't even, I started to rewatch this for this podcast, and I was like, I don't even need to. I truly don't need to. I've seen this movie so many times and own so many VHS copies of this movie. Yeah, this is a movie about a poor brother and sister. The brother gets into a scrape with a rich boy. The sister tries to fix it and instead gets caught in a web of being sexually assaulted and ends up defending herself. And they realize they're never going to be believed. And so they go on the run. And then Billie Jean becomes a legend.
Yes.
And, it's so good. And there's sexiness, and there's, like, haircuts, and there's...
and the fashion.
And fashion, and mall runs, and being on the run, and hiding in miniature golf place. What are you,
miniature golf course?
Yeah, there we
go. That's putt-putt. That was really
and
a putt-putt.
It actually has a satisfying ending of what do you do when a teenager becomes this famous? And it's tackling things, I think, back in 1985 that we're still, like, it's like still a thing. All of it's still a thing. And the first time I saw it, it knocked my d- off. Am I allowed to say
yes,
it? It knocked my d- into the dirt. And I love this movie.
Awesome.
So.
I haven't checked to see if that happened with me yet, but I just saw it last night. So this movie,
it takes some time.
Its effect is still sitting in with
but
me.
But it had an effect.
It certainly did. And I echo a lot of the sentiments that Emily just said. And I feel like this is going to be a really fun episode because even people who haven't seen it, we're going to be talking, as we always do, talking about the plot and some of the details. But even if you haven't seen it yet, I think that this show could be the gateway into you wanting to check it out.
It should be.
It really should be. Anyway, yeah. So Mark, I'll start with you. The question of the moment, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong at 39% for The Legend of Billie Jean?
The audience ain't wrong. The audience got it right. They knew this is a fresh movie. And the 39% rotten, I really am excited to hear some of the reviews that our buddy Tim selected for why this movie's rotten, because I don't see, like, this doesn't even feel like a guilty pleasure. This feels like an actual quality movie where, I mean, it doesn't have the biggest budget in the world, and it echoed a lot of things from, like, okay, Red Dawn came out the year before. But it also was a precursor to the social media age and to even something like Natural Born Killers, which came out in the early 90s. So there's a lot going on with this movie, and I don't know what the critics missed other than this might have come out at a time where they were a little sick of seeing these darn kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it felt like every movie reviewer was like a bad guy from an episode of Scooby-Doo where it's like, you darn kids. It's like, no, the kids are all right.
Yeah, the kids are all right. Emily, I dare even ask this. I dare even ask if Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. I'm going to ask the real question. How wrong is Rotten Tomatoes?
So, so wrong. And sometimes you watch movies as a kid and then you watch them as an adult and you go, especially when you're showing them to like friends or a loved one, and you're like, oh no, what have I done? This is a bad movie. This isn't a bad movie.
No.
It's not perfect. Maybe it is. but it is not perfect. I can see that. But also, I felt like, and I didn't know back then the first time I saw it, what critics thought of it. That wasn't the kind of thing I looked into. I think I saw it on HBO the first time. But it feels like what sometimes happens to movies now, where it's like people, the critics just want to punish a type of movie rather than evaluating the movie for what it is. That's what I chalked it up to, even though I don't know why. The punishing happened, I'm not sure. So I'm interested to hear what they hated about it, because I kind of started looking at it and I was like, I'm going to wait until talk about this with you guys. But no, long story short, they're wrong.
I completely agree. And I will say it used to be worse. This movie was like 10%, maybe 12%, not that many years ago. And obviously, I think through VHS and other things, people have come to our way of thinking. I do think this is a damn near perfect movie. Yeah. I love it so much. I love what it speaks to. And if this movie is wrong, then I don't want to be right. Like, I just don't. But
can I say something real quick? The writer, one of the writers of this movie, Connor, right?
Lawrence Connor.
Father of Jenny Connor of Girls fame, and Jeremy Connor, who's also a very talented director, comedy director. What a crazy thing!
That is a crazy thing.
Yeah.
Dude, Hollywood. I love that.
I've been telling Jenny Connor I would like to meet her father. So
seriously, though, I want to talk about this.
In the face.
So let's go ahead and find out. I obviously think that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong, very wrong as they can be, honestly. But let's find out what the critics were saying and take it over to our favorite segment, 2 Minutes with Tim.
2 Minutes with Tim.
Joan of Arc makes for a great cinematic protagonist, most notably in The Passion of Joan of Arc, which is one of the best movies ever made. If you haven't seen that one, you should probably get on that. The idea of transplanting the most famous of rebellious teenagers to the present day isn't necessarily a bad one. And with a cast that included two fresh-faced up-and-coming stars named Slater, lead Helen, and supporting player Christian, who are no relation, as well as some old pros like Peter Coyote and Dean Stockwell, you got a teen movie with some solid pedigree. However, while critics praised the cast and were particularly impressed with the star power of Helen Slater, they were largely unimpressed with the plot, which they felt was predictable and often ludicrous. The Legend of Billie Jean is rotten at 39% on the tomato meter with 38 reviews, and it has a 75% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Rick Lyman of the Philadelphia Inquirer wrote, "If The Legend of Billie Jean is painfully short on sense, it's dreadfully long on style. The kind of heavy-handed flashiness that's been used by every Flashdance ripoff of the last 2 years." However, in a fresh review, Rex Reed of the New York Post wrote, "The Legend of Billie Jean is no masterpiece, but it's engaging fun. And it's got something to take home. A message that gives young people the courage to stand up for their beliefs, despite overwhelming odds." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "Rebellious in spirit and anarchic in style, This Helen Slater starting vehicle holds a certain youthful cool, but is otherwise a disjointed retelling of an oft-repeated legend. So that's the legend of Billie Jean. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark. To paraphrase this movie's tagline, the last thing either of them ever expected was to become a hero.
I mean, I think there's some heroic moments on this podcast every week.
Including today.
Including right now when I say, let's go dive into movie talk. Okay, we'll start at the beginning because, Mark, you watched it last night.
First time ever.
And, like, I think this is one that got into your DNA a little bit from the first viewing.
It really did because I don't know that I have a rebellious teenage spirit in me anymore. I don't know that I ever really did.
Like, Jezebel boy that you are.
I was just a good kid. I didn't never mean to no harm. But when you look at a movie like this and you get, look, I'm going to be drawn to this movie because of the star power. And it's cool to see Christian Slater that young being in like his first starring role. And then Helen Slater is so good in this. Like it actually like shocked me how great the performances were in this movie. And from everybody, from the kids, from the adults, and Peter Coyote is the detective, like who's kind of on the kid's side. Like it's so great to have this classic hippie kind of dude who now has become the man, but he still has a little bit of that spirit in him still. And I just found it really interesting that, like what Tim said, the tagline was, you did not do this to become a hero. There's, I think we live in a world now where so many people are looking for attention and trying doing things just to get that 15 minutes of fame or that 15 seconds of social media notoriety. And here, we weren't trying to do anything special. We're just trying to live our lives. And the adults, the bully, they just would not let it go. So we our backs were against the wall. We had to do something. We didn't know what that something was going to lead to. And so I just thought it was a really interesting movie as it goes along to follow along with the plot and see, is this going to end tragically? Is this going to end up well for our heroes? Because I legit cared about them by the end.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So you saw this on HBO for the first time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I didn't see it in the theater. I know that
definitely.
Much.
Yeah. Me and you had similar, like, at home, but parents had cable. That's where we saw movies.
And didn't care what I watched.
And didn't care what I watched. Yeah, that's when I saw Heather's was when I saw this. Have you ever seen it on the big screen?
I never have, and it is a lifelong dream of mine. And for a long time, I would complain that the new bevs of LA were not running movies like this. And now we have so many and they are running movies like this, which is very exciting.
But you're too busy.
Exactly. That's the inherent problem. That is the inherent problem. It's like, oh my God, so many movies I would love to see. I'm not going to be there. I'm so sorry. but I would love to. Have you ever seen it on a big screen?
So I have seen it on a big screen. The Alamo Drafthouse in Corpus Christi played it. And I did it. And they had a Legend of Billie Jean like themed menu for it that night. It was like a whole thing. Yeah, it was one of those like specialty Alamo screenings, like back at the Ritz when it was just before Joe Rogan turned it into a comedy club. There was like a two-seater theater
so
and they would
cool.
do that stuff. It's actually funny that you mentioned those rep screenings because the first time I met you in person after being a Twitter friend, do you remember where it was? It was at the screening of Shaun of the Dead.
We were, yes, at the
Greek.
At the Greek. That's right.
So it's like a friendship born through movies.
That's right. I remember that.
That's so crazy. Anyway, I first saw it on HBO as well. I dug this movie. It's so funny they talk about the style of it because instantly, I, at that time, had short hair. Like, I was doing the, like, Toni Braxton, like, curly thing that black girls did back then. And so I was like, bitch, I am Billie Jean. You don't even know. Like, y'all may not. I may be only 7, but this is my style. Like, I live for this. And I just loved everything about it. I loved the the girl empowerment of it. I loved the rebelliousness of it because I was not like you. I learned to talk back at age four. And so, like, just that about it. And also kids being wild, like the bikes of them, like, you know, biking 20 miles away from where they should to get into trouble. That was very much my, like, adolescence. And so I really dug everything about this.
And it was cool to see all of the kids sort of follow in Billie Jean's footsteps from the standpoint of they're still looking for leadership. They still crave.
Still conformists in some ways. Yeah, very much so.
There's a structure that they need, but it's they're not getting it from the adults, whether it's in a place that's a little run down or whether it's a nice suburb. These folks go all over when they're on the run, and they meet all different kinds of kids, and they all are looking at Billie Jean as their leader, as their Joan of Arc. And so it's just such an interesting character study to watch Billie Jean have to embrace not just the role of like a hero and like this sort of Billy the Kid outlaw thing, but to see these kids that she's inspiring and to be like the shining light for them. I think that that's one of the things that keeps her going is that it's not just about her anymore. It's about this movement that she inevitably created with her pals.
Yeah, the crazy thing is, like, in the beginning when Billie Jean has got the evil, you know, shop owner, you know, he's like, hey, I just want, because like, he breaks his motorcycle, you know, young. And I Hobie is Christian Slater, who plays her son. He breaks his motorcycle. And if you remember, the motorcycle was from the dad's insurance money from dying. And, like, as a former, like, poor kid, I know that money. Yeah. Like, you know that, like, I know kids that, like, the dad's Social Security or the dad's insurance money was literally all the money that they had to maybe buy their first car or even hopefully maybe go to a community college. And when some rich kid takes that from you because they can, like...
And it means nothing to you. It means nothing to the rich kids. Like, that's the thing that really struck me was, like, this money meant nothing to the rich people in this movie. And it meant everything to Billy Jean and to the brother. What's his name?
Binks.
Binks. Yes. What a great name also, by
Binks.
The way.
Yeah, Binks before Hocus Pocus, I might add.
Billy Jean and Binks? Like, I love that. Could not be, love it.
That scooter meant nothing to Barry Tubb because he was going off the Top Gun the next year anyway.
Yes, that's right. And he played a jerk in that one
as
too.
As soon as I saw the name Barry Tubb, I'm like, this movie just keeps giving me riches.
He is a cartoon character in that movie, by the way. He and his dad are both kind of cartoon characters.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
And I do miss that era of like cartoon villains that are just like, I'm evil. Why? Because you, that's why.
Just give me a Snidely Whiplash, like good old fashioned, I'm bad and I'm not going to change. Even though Barry does by the end.
The kid does,
right.
But I still feel like the, now if this movie was made, you'd have to give them like a very satisfying backstory of why they're in so much pain and a poor kid killed their family.
Some people
like,
are just...
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sorry, like, that's the other thing about this movie is rich people with that level of entitlement we see now all the time. Yeah. So the idea that they didn't exist back then, right, I do think they play them cartoonishly, but their wants and desires and, like, how they would approach these people that were asking something from them that they didn't think they wanted to give, they would treat it the same way. Like, literally not too recently, I had an example of that where somebody's like, I'm just going to do this to you because I know it's going to make you cry and I can. Like exerting power over people that you can exert power over is something that a lot of people 100%. Are seduced by.
And it's cartoonish, but it's real.
It's so real.
I really loved the, I was obsessed with kind of seedy underbellies my entire life. And I was also a very bad kid, very rebellious kid. And when I saw this movie and I was like, there are like, when they go into the basement and all those like Billie Jean kids are there, I was like, I want to go to there. I want there to be like an underground system of kids who are like outside of the system and like not, no one cares about them that are working together to like cause some chaos. Yeah. I wanted that desperately.
And the thing is, they're not in that basement doing what all the adults probably assume they are, right? Like, I don't recall there being a lot of drug use or drinking.
No sex,
or anything.
No drugs, no rock and roll.
Right. We're not even hooking up. There's like, we're holding hands
they're
and we're
organizing.
Kissing.
Yeah.
Right.
They're organizing. Like, community organizing. Yeah. Like, this is like.
As soon as Billie Jean starts making out with Lloyd, it's like the camera's like, nope. And it just pans away. No, we're not doing it. This is not what this movie's about.
It's not what this movie's about. I do say it had really smart direction and really smart writing in it. Very similar to Heather. I think in that way that like people didn't pay attention to. And it has some great scenes. I have a ton, but Emily, I'll ask you, do you have a favorite scene?
I mean, I have had a lifelong crush on Keith Gordon as a result of this movie.
Really?
I found him to be, I was like the like rich kid who's using his power for good and kind of like has a water slide and wears gorilla mask and loves horror movies. I was like, how can I meet this guy?
Yeah.
When will this be my boyfriend? And I tried real hard and I got some bad copies of that. Like, don't go for just that.
For an archetype that you saw in a movie. It's, they wrote them better than the real thing.
And I couldn't even get a rich one. It was just like guys into horror movies. That's my whole life. And oh, you're treating me like shit. You weren't supposed to, but I guess that's fine.
That's what every girl wants. Is the guy, as soon as his dad leaves the house for a week, he turns the whole thing into a haunted house.
Yeah, man.
That is the sexiest thing I can imagine. So the scene where they kind of meet and are like kind of flirting with each other, I also thought they're meeting each other on an intellectually, and I'm saying all this from the viewpoint of a kid watching this. I could see, I was like, oh, these are two intellectuals meeting. And I didn't see a lot of that in movies. I didn't see men taking women that seriously in movies a lot when I was a kid.
And weaponizing himself.
Yeah. That really got me. I also really love the scene where Potter gets her period.
Yes.
I think that, and I was like, what a clever thing that I've never seen in a movie before. Is yes. Like the one thing that men hate and are most afraid of in life, menstruation. And adding that to like a fake, like a, oh no, she's been shot. Oh no. And then men being like, oh no. I found that delicious.
And then best writing in the movie was in that moment. Binks does his like kid and she's like, shut up.
Yeah.
This is it's beautiful.
Progressive. Because like I keep waiting for this movie to sort of show its 80s-ness, you know, to show that it was made in a period of time 35 years ago, 40 years, where it just doesn't hold up.
No.
And you're right. We get the cartoonish villains, but all the kids in this that you're rooting for, like they share the ideals that I think a lot of kids today do.
100%.
And so it's like, and I know that this movie wasn't a box office. It has become a cult classic, but the reach of movies like this, I won't give all the credit to this one film, but the reach of movies like this, where maybe they were off the beaten path. They weren't the biggest movie, the multiplex that summer. You can feel it permeating still.
Yeah.
And like the scene with every kid is so good. Seeing Yardley Smith, like the future Lisa Simpson is
doing
so
Lisa Simpson in the movie.
Yeah.
Doing Lisa Simpson in the movie.
And she pretty much is. Yeah. And it's like everybody brought their A game to this.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't a bad. And again, like we need one note villains sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not about them.
And the movie didn't have room for that.
No. And that's how the kids see all of them. As a matter of fact, the one authority figure who does end up sympathizing with the kids, he has to win them over.
Yep.
It ain't the other way around.
Yeah.
Like the kids have to start trusting him because we're holding him up at gunpoint just like we would any other adult in that situation in the mall that a young Jacqueline Coley frequented probably every Friday night.
All right. We'll get to that when we get to my scene. What's a favorite scene for you?
Oh, man. Well, the fact that they do crash at a mini golf course, that's like immediately where I would go because, you know, you can sleep under the stars.
Yeah, straight kid logic. Yeah, I love the kid logic in this movie.
And as a guy who worked at a mini golf course for multiple summers, free ice cream, too. All you have to do is break into the shed and you get all the free
food
you want.
That's all you have to do.
So
their diet, their continual diet
of junk,
of nothing but junk food. And I like when the movie hints at what's about to come. It gives you a little foreshadowing when they're in a grocery store with some clearly more well-to-do kids.
Yeah.
And the kids realize who they are. They asked for an autograph, first autograph Billie Jean's ever signed, and they bought them a crap ton of groceries, not necessarily representing the four food groups that we need for health, but there ain't a lot of vegetables in that bag, but it's a lot of, it's the things that kids would think that they need to survive. And so now we're seeing other kids not saying, oh, I'm going to turn them in because I could get
$1,000,
I could get $10,000.
Yeah.
I am going to hold on to this because this is more valuable.
Yeah. And using their privilege for good, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Using their privilege for good. The kid solidarity, the teen solidarity, the like, we're tired of adults. Like what they did to this movie, what adults did to this movie knew they were going to do. And so they put it in very much the kids' hands in that way because it was the same thing. It's like, we think we know what this is, but the kids knew. Like anybody under the age of 20 that saw this movie, I think, knew what it was. My favorite scene, and I will say it, is because I absolutely adore that Pat Benatar song. I'll give you a little history about that because she's actually one of the reasons why it took this movie 40 years to get put on DVD. She hated it.
That's what I've heard.
She hated the movie.
She thought it was awful. And it was actually a bit of a fan campaign of her fans being like, I know you think this sucks, but we loved it.
Wow.
And we love you because of this movie.
And we love
Pat
you.
Pat was rocking the short hair, too.
Yeah. You have to know at the time, she was Pat Benatar, and this was a besmirch on her sort of like legacy
her reputation,
at that time. And so I could see
why she was Nintendo, and this was her Super Mario Brothers.
Kind of. And so she just kind of buried it. And then when it became a cult classic, at first she was just like, screw this. But then after a while, I think she realized, she was like, oh, no, this is a thing. And like when I finally got my Blu-ray, I literally wanted to send her a note on Twitter and be like, thank you so much.
Because,
yeah, it was her blocking it that sort of like made wow. it not be able to be reproduced outside of VHS for decades.
And that's why I had to hold on to my VHS, yes. even without a VCR, because I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get this movie again. But now I own it. It's fine.
No,
she's the perfect catalyst for the movie, too, from a yeah. soundtrack standpoint. Yeah. Like there's no even like you could have the Runaways. You could have like Joan Jett. And it's yeah. like Pat Benatar is the perfect
so
sort of bridge yeah. to understanding this. I did also love hearing an alternate version that I'd never heard before
yes.
of Billy Idol's Rebel Yell. I'm
yes.
like,
hell
this
yeah.
is
yes.
a different Rebel yeah, Yell, yeah, yeah. but it's still kicking
hell
ass.
Yeah. Just for this, and it was just for this soundtrack, which, by the way, one of the best collector's items is if you can get the Legend of Billie Jean record, which I've never gotten, but it's very expensive. What I was going to say is my favorite scene is her coming down to the pool with the hair, and it's like,
and the way
the music plays.
Actual goosebumps.
Yes.
Yeah, actual
yeah.
goosebumps.
And
yeah.
director Matthew Robbins, the way he shot that, I was ready to run. I had just fit, I went to the gym last night. I picked up my Shinerbach. I came home, I'm watching the movie, and I'm ready to go back to the gym when I see that scene because he shoots the reflection of her in the pool.
Yeah.
And it's like the hero has arrived. I mean, this is Joseph Campbell stuff
Dude,
now.
It's
yeah.
so hot. It's yeah. so and that's the other, like, this is such a lesbian. Lesbians yeah. love this movie
yes.
more than anything. And
bisexual women as
oh,
well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My best friend, longtime best friend, who is a lesbian, she was like, you know, when we first met, and she was like, I wasn't sure what was up with you, because one of the first things we did together was watch this movie, and then we watched the Angelina Jolie, is it Foxfire? Fox?
Salt?
No, it's Fox. It's
oh,
got the
yeah.
word. It's a very, it's like sexy, sexy lady gang, and they literally get topless and tattoo each other in
I
the movie.
I did not know this.
It's one of
okay.
It,
we need
Fox
to get the
Fire.
Title of this right now.
I think it's Foxfire. Yay. How dare you guys? I know my Angelina Jolie movies.
It's
it has the word Fox
F.
in
Go
it.
Look it up.
Definitely Fox. But yeah, this movie is very lesbian hot. Foxfire.
Foxfire yeah. from 1996.
Oh,
and
I did not know.
It's
anything.
Also a happen and dive bar in the Valley,
there
in
you
Valley
go.
Village.
Oh, yes,
and then
right.
and not
right.
and or Firefox, which is a great. We're sponsored by Firefox today, guys. Hey, thanks for coming.
Let's just get all the brands in this one. Anyway, no, that is my favorite scene. My second scene to that is their run through Sunrise Mall.
So great.
Because for folks that don't know, Sunrise Mall, I believe now, is not a mall anymore. It's just like a community college and it's not real. But that was the mall in Corpus. I saw so many movies there because that was also the Dollar Cinema in Corpus.
Oh, cool.
And it was next to the like Rich Kids Mall, which was which came later. Like that mall came when I was like a 14 is when we got the good mall, but I could only shop at the one that had Sears, and that was the mall.
We had an old mall and a new mall,
yes.
and they were connected by JCPenney, and you can either afford the old mall or afford the new mall. Yeah.
Ours were not connected, but they were definitely right next to each
so
other.
So funny.
Like, right there, and they run through, and it's a gorgeous mall. Like, it had the big waterfall, yeah. and it had, like, a rock and roll stop. I mean, it really does look like the mall from, like, Fast Times in Ridgemont High. It is such an 80s mall, and it was a huge deal when it came to Corpus. Like, the way they treat this mall in this moment of Billie Jean is the way they treat the mall when it comes into Stranger Things, because that's how new it was at that time. Like, I think it came out in like 1980 or 1982. Mm-hmm. So
it was
like
the
a brand
perfect
new mall.
Okay, so it was a big mall for me. Watching this movie, it was a big mall because they had an escalator.
Yeah,
yes.
At
thing,
that
yeah.
time, I don't know if they've added one since, but Patrick Henry Mall in Williamsburg, Virginia was just one story. And so it was a nice mall, but it wasn't like I didn't know what a rich mall was. Until actually, and then I went to college at Wake.
Haynes Mall, baby.
Yeah.
Really?
Haynes Mall, right next to Forsyth County Hospital,
yep.
where I was born. And I was like, man, y'all really come up since I was born here. Because that was just like the happening spot. Then you go to the nice mall, you go to Village Tavern for dinner, uh-huh. and it's like, oh, okay, Winston-Salem. Look at us.
Baby, you should see it now. We'll talk about that off the bike. I love that mall. And my favorite part of that mall sequence, I think, also as an adult who is in the industry now, the interviews that the news interviews of the kids
yeah.
is
yeah.
such a fun moment. And it's and it like you said, it's another way of us seeing how big this is getting. And that one, there's like some of them are funny and some of them are just like, and then this happened, and then this. Like, it's such a funny moment, but it also accomplishes a lot with just a couple of little tiny segments of these kids getting interviewed. It's a great scene.
Yeah.
That whole scene is amazing.
I just went to investigate. Yes, Sunrise Mall was still live and well, and the only remaining things that are in it are a Planet Fitness, Freedom Fitness, and a New Life Church, and the things that own it have now filed for bankruptcy. So it's one of these commercial buildings that is being like walked away from, but it's still got a church, a Planet Fitness, and a Freedom Fitness.
I'll guarantee you that the church there is in the Dollar Movie Theater, is where the Dollar Movie Theater used to be.
Yes, and that was in the Dollar Movie Theater. I will say, did make it, like, I even saw it the last time I went home to Corpus. I went to the Dollar Theater because it only closed in 2019.
Oh, wow.
It just closed, that Dollar Theater.
Wow.
Anyway,
it feels like a Dollar Theater in Corpus should, or like an Alamo Draft, should always have either Billie Jean or Selena, like,
yeah,
just like
constantly
just running
playing.
Constantly.
Yeah. With Pearl Harbor. Those are the three big movies that were filmed there. And yeah, no, it's a
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor at the Lexington, not like in the city, but at the dock.
We'll run the trailer for Pearl Harbor before The Legend of Billie Jean.
I think that's got to be. Yeah, that's
fair.
Good.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'm just letting you know the ones that, like, anybody that comes to my town cares and thinks about.
The chase scene in the mall is one of the few times in the movie where I'm like, okay, these villains are beyond stupid now.
Yeah, felt for sure.
Like, that was the worst attempt at a coup, or like at overthrow, like, you know, a bait and switch with somebody
so dumb
I've ever seen. It's like your big plan is, first of all, there's a cop 5 feet from you.
Facts.
And so your son is just going to like come out and just be a goon on the escalator.
Yeah.
That's the plan. You can't come up with anything but come on, dude.
Yeah,
how do you run a store that has that survived for any amount of time and you're this bad at doing something that seems so simple?
It does. There's a big Joan of Arc connection that they put to this. And I'm not going to say that, like, her becoming a legend was true. The big difference on this one is, like, Joan of Arc was first, she went from pet to threat, right? She became something that they wanted to use for propaganda and everything that they wanted for it. And the minute she became something too big, they wanted to destroy her. This one is very different in the sense that them rejecting her is what turned her into a threat. And so I do think, like, maybe some of the iconography of Joan of Arc is there, but I don't really dig as much of the Joan of Arc.
I think, and
vibe.
Also it's just haircut. I think they literally like, haircut, lady got short hair, Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
But also, obviously, in the end, when they're burning the effigy of her, I was like, clearly, and like, I could see where Joan of Arc, the movie, is in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, you can see all those connections. But to me, Billie Jean is, it's not that she's rejected, she's objectified.
Yeah.
Like, she's objectified, and I saw such a class thing there of like it wasn't even a conversation I don't think they had in the movie of like, they're never going to believe us because we're poor. It was just like, yeah, duh.
We're not even going to ask.
We don't even have to discuss this amongst ourselves. They're not going to believe us and we have to get out of here because this is bad. Another great movie where there's no parents.
Yes.
Love that. Except for Potter's mom who smacks her.
Oh, yeah. Because what? She goes out on a date. Like, and like the mom shows up for the very beginning, goes out on a date, and we never see her
That's
again.
That's it.
That was what I was going to mention. So,
yeah, if I'm Potter, I'm definitely trying to join these fellow kids.
Yeah.
Who are
scared. And that was the best thing. Slap me, let me get the scissors. You just recreated my entire childhood. Like, every interaction with my mother.
You think you can hurt me?
You're going to hurt me,
more?
I'm going to hurt you more.
And also, I'm going to hurt myself more than you can ever hurt me, so don't even try.
I think we literally, so me and Emily went for a walk recently, and I literally think that was the subject of the talk, would be like, revenge.
Yeah.
I'm just still about revenge.
Moms and how they hurt us and how
we hurt them back.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it in this movie. This is what I was going to say. I remember now about the corpus of it all. This is a Corpus movie. It is an island movie, though. So there's a two separate Corpus Christi, I would say, cultures, which is that the kids that lived in the city on the where the mall was, but these were island kids who lived out on the bluff, who are maybe military kids.
That's interesting.
And now that place has been totally redeveloped and it's all rich yuppie houses. But back in the 80s, that was where the poor people lived. Like, people that were poor lived on the island. And so South Padre Island, especially that like first southern part of it outside of the ones that were by the water, those were the places where, you know, you had trailer parks, and those trailer parks are still there. Those are the people that are closer to the beach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you could still live in that life.
It's what I loved about these kids, though, is that in spite of how hopeless their setup is, they never lose enthusiasm. Like even when they know nobody's going to believe us, they're still having such a good time. They still have that enthusiasm for life. And when they get a couple breaks, when they show up at Keith Gordon's dad's place and he's got a video camera, it's like, oh, now I was so moved by just the, first of all, how great Billie Jean was on camera, but you still believe that it's like she's never been on she's never made a movie, but she's never had to do a stand-up piece before. And so it's raw, but it's still there. And that's the way that kids back in the day would think, this is the only way for us to get our message out is the power of the media.
Yeah.
And you think about how it would have caught wildfire, you know, back when Twitter was still a living, breathing organism, or like through Instagram or TikTok or whatever. And like so many kids would kind of get on the trend. Everybody would be cutting their hair.
It would be
like
huge,
Billie
yeah.
Jean. And it would be this whole thing with, you know, and then you'd have backlashes and
they would have milkshake ducked her within a week.
But she was the original viral back when you had to go viral before the internet. Like, it's so weird to me that y'all grew up in North Carolina and I grew up here. But like kids trends, like the rumors and everything that kids knew, like the language of children still permeated literally throughout the United States, even though it wasn't necessarily something we even saw on TV. It was just something that everybody knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very strange.
Thinking about urban legends and like how stuff traveled back then is like such a fascinating, like my husband who grew up in Pakistan would read secondhand like Mad magazines that had their covers ripped off. And so he was like, there's so many movies he grew up only knowing by their Mad magazine version.
Oh, wow.
And he would see the ads and stuff in the back of them. And and he would know about, like, he would read about video games that he didn't have access to. And I was like, this is how that kind of stuff spreads. Like, all of us were kind of checking, all of us were reading Mad Magazine, all of us were watching the same weird little shows, all of us were seeing the same ads. And like, slowly this thing, this language kept permeating, even though we didn't have, and that's what bumps me out about the internet now, is like, it's too easy to spread this stuff around.
It is too easy to spread this stuff. And like, look, the idea of being cool with knowledge is so ubiquitous now.
Yeah.
It's actually now more interesting, I think, the people that live in the knowledge as opposed to just consume it. It's like, oh, I didn't just read about this thing. Like, I was there when it happened. So you have to, the things that you have to leave your house to experience are the only ones where you can actually build a tangible culture around it now.
I don't know that the kids believe that. I think that's 100% true. I don't know that children believe that. That scares me.
It does scare me. But the one thing I know for sure is whatever your parents think is cool, your kids are going to reject. And I already see it right now with the internet. The kids that are being raised by their constantly online, completely socially public parents, millennials that are all over Instagram and everything, their kids are becoming analog freaks. Their kids are saying, I don't want to be on
the Good, because when they were 5 years old and they were high coming home from the dentist, their parents thought it was cute to put it on Instagram and Facebook. And now they're like, I didn't want to be that.
We're going to get some lawsuits.
Yeah.
We're going to get some lawsuits from those kids.
So that's the one thing that I will say is like, our terminally online culture of right now will be completely rejected by the next generation, just the way that we rejected our parents' versions of like records and everything else, you know. And
it's why this is a great summer movie too. Is because like you see this movie, you don't have to go to school the next day. You want to go out in the woods and build a fort. You want to.
Yes.
You don't run away from home necessarily, but you want to get to that next block where the last time you threatened to run away, you made it before you came home. You want to get. Let me just get to the other side of town.
Yeah.
Let me get on my bike and see what else is out there. It's like that Goodwill Hunting speech that Robin gives Matt Damon on the park bench, because Matt Damon he's like any kid, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, or a do your own research bro now, where it's like, no, I already know everything. I've read everything. I've consumed everything. And Robin's like, you've never smelled the Sistine Chapel. You know, you've never held your friend as they
were dying.
It's the same sort of thing.
It's the same sort of thing. And I think those experiences are going to become a lot more precious, because you can't be precious about the knowledge because it's all at your fingertips. Like, anybody can find out.
It's not special anymore.
It's not special anymore. But I remember what the Corpus Christi Mall water fountain smells like. You don't. Like, I remember
like
what
pool,
it was
right?
Like
a dirty pool?
Like a dirty pool with a little mix of orange Julius and pretzels.
Oh.
Like, that's what it smells
like.
Barry Tubb
is like, I know what it feels like to be kneed in the nuts seven times in this movie.
Yes.
A lot of knees to the crotch, and there's a couple really good shoulder shots.
Yes.
Which I appreciate in a movie where we're not killing people. We're just like, you're going to get wounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only time things get real is when
Hunter gets her period.
When Hunter gets her period. But also when adults get involved. When adults get involved is when things get scary. One of my favorite scenes also in this too is when they go to the little boy's house who's being abused. Like
oh my God.
That is the scene that gets cut now with the studio. They're like, why do we need that scene?
Is it slightly corny? Yes. Do I love it?
Absolutely.
100%.
Because you do need that moment to show that this is not just about her. Because everybody's making this bigger than her. That was her showing that she realizes that she is bigger than the moment.
And it shows how powerful that not just one or two kids are, but an army of children.
Yes.
Now, even the adult, who's the biggest guy in the room, he is cowering down because he sees all the kids.
When now, he looks out that window,
and then the other window. So if that's me, I'd like to think I wouldn't be abusing my child, but I see all those kids show up at my place, and my first thought is, this is Children of the Corn. I am in a zombie apocalypse. I need to get the hell out of here. So that scene is so necessary. It's showing that the kids now have a card to play. They have an ace in the hole that the adults don't have.
They have numbers. I also, like, as the adult rewatching it, I forced a bunch of men in the pandemic. We had like a movie group with some people in other parts of the country. We were like, we're all going to watch the same movie, and then we're going to like get online and chat about it. We were so bored.
How many weeks into this project before The Legend of Billie Jean?
When the first time I was given, like, you pick the movie.
Yeah.
This is the movie I picked. And many of these lovely movie bros that I've been around were like, yeah, I don't know, we'll see. And then all of them loved it, which I loved. But the adult in me, when I watched it, was like, that was a pretty quick solution. When she comes out, he's like, Joey's going to be staying with her. It's granddad for a while. And I was like, that's a very fast solution. Yeah. Just as a Billie Jean can get out of there.
I was like, as a therapist, you're like, there's some paperwork that needs to be involved in this.
I was like, because I think even as an adult, as a kid and as an adult, I was like, is that kid going to go with them now? Like, how do you get that kid to safety from here?
I don't think
here?
That kid made it to grandma's house. I think that I'm kid a little is worried like, about that kid. Wherever you're going, I'm following
you. Yeah, I will say this.
You're my mom now.
I know a lot more kids that were raised by grandmas. I'm not saying that that doesn't end up being the way that it is, but I was like, yeah, he's going to grandma's.
He's got to get to grandma.
He's going to eat some good food. It's going to be way better for him living in the world of more kids raised by their grandmothers than by their actual.
Having to deal with CPS as a professional, a lot of grandmas.
Yeah.
A lot of tired grandmas who do it anyway.
There's several iconic lines. We've already said Emily, for folks that are listening to us, is here in her Fair is Fair shirt, which has Billie Jean right in that scene that I talked about. Shaking her
messing
hair.
With her hair.
Messing that short little cut. So that one we're going to take off the table. Mark, do you have a favorite quote from this one?
Ooh, it's nothing that's all that entirely memorable other than you got to realize, folks, that it's not just Florida. If you go swimming in certain parts of Texas, gators are there and they're out. Because one of the things that always bugs me in movies as a kid who grew up in North Carolina and Virginia is that you don't necessarily want to go swimming in those holes, even if that's the only pool you have, because there's water moccasins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's
true.
A lot of scary stuff in there. So just because it looks cute in a movie, don't go swimming.
Well, by the way, has anyone ever looked as hot as she looked in that swimsuit in that opening scene? Has any woman in the world?
I didn't want to admit it, so I had to look it up right there. I just had to look up how old Helen Slater was when she made this movie. She was in her 20s. I think she was 22, 23. So I'm like, all right, I'm safe with Supergirl.
Yeah. Blistering hot.
Seriously.
I see why they sold the photo of her. Terrible. Get her consent. But terrible. I see why they were doing.
Why are those four bullies? I get that you're bullies, like you just have all these hormones going through you that you don't even know what to do with. How about one of you be nice to Christian Slater?
To get in good with the sister.
Yeah. How about you fix this bike up with your rich kid money? And then boom, you just have this gift of a human that's just like, I'm just waiting for any guy to be nice. You don't even have to be nice to me. Just don't sexually assault me in your shop. And
don't beat up my brother.
Yeah. It's not that hard.
Yeah. She's very hot.
I will say this. It's the same. It's so interesting though, too, because I do believe it. The rich kid slumming it with the hot poor girl is a thing that it does always happen in these movies, but it is kind of real.
And it's real and it's hot.
Yeah.
You know what's great about that scene, the two with Keith Gordon and his dad is on a business trip. And you know where his dad was? His dad was on a business trip to Dallas because he was opening a Fat and Tall chain because his dad is Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School. And
hell
so in
yes.
my head canon, I'm like, Rodney Dangerfield, if he shows up at the end of this movie, I'm going to lose my mind.
That would break the movie.
That would break the movie. Yeah, because that is his dad in Back to School. Oh, my God. No, he was definitely the, like, coded Jewish character of the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like, he was
the asthma thing?
Yes, asthma thing. Like, it was...
He didn't need them pills once he got on the road with the kids.
Exactly. Really? He's like, I haven't had a squirt yet. They said something like that.
It's another line I like from the movie because it's like, wow, this freedom thing is really growing on these kids.
Yeah.
My favorite one was the woman that plays Ophelia when they're like, where is she? And she's like, everywhere.
Everywhere!
I was like,
her accent is bananas.
By the way, though, her accent is bananas. Everybody else does a pretty credible Texas Southern accent of that era, which is not the same as Texas.
Okay.
Like, I will say the people that do it the best are Yeardley, because, of course, a voice actor would. Helen, who, of course, would get it well. and the guy that plays the cop,
Peter Coyote.
Peter Coyote. Yeah. They get the, like, because the Southern Texas accent has a little bit of Chicano mixed in there.
Oh,
I cannot describe it, but you can hear it.
Yeah. What a lovely, by the way, run of, we should do a thing of like, movies where the main bad guy like is on the protagonist side secretly. You got Thelma and Louise.
Yep.
You got Fugitive a little bit. Yep. I'll take that. Like, I love anything where it's like, well, I don't know. They actually seem like pretty good people to me.
Yeah, Peter, he's kind of like a Tommy Lee Jones in the Fugitive type where deep inside he's just like, you know what? I used to be a rebellious kid.
Yeah, and Harvey Keitel being like, well, these ladies must have been doing whatever. I don't know why they did it, but they must have been.
Run. I got to see that. Yeah, the guy on the hunt who's like, I don't know if I should be hunting this person like that.
I love, my favorite line of any movie is Tommy Lee Jones when he's like, I didn't kill my wife. And he's like, I don't care. It's the best line of all time.
And just give him the Oscar.
At him like, why would you think I do?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Do you have a favorite line before we get out of here?
I mean, it's hard to not do Fair is Fair. It's hard to not do It's Wonderful when she gets her period. It's hard. All of these are great lines. I also love when the little kid brings the videotape into the newsroom.
Oh, he's so cute.
And he does like the little Superman arms. He can't get the Fair is Fair. That's my favorite line. That motion of that little kid doing
that.
That
little kid. By the way, they did go into KIII, which is the local Corpus Christi station, and as well as C101. That is
a real
radio. That's our version of the radio station that you're here. That's like the rock station. And
that's the 95.5 KLOS.
That's the
95.5
of that. Yeah. We could talk about this movie literally forever.
And Kit Kat hasn't changed. The classic Kit Kat. When Putter's holding it, and that's another one of my favorite quotes. Is like, well, you probably feel bad because you've had 20 of them.
Yeah.
But like, that's how Kit Kat is supposed to. It's not supposed to have mint in it. Okay. It's not supposed to have dark chocolate. That's what a Kit Kat was back in the 80s, kids.
Okay, you sound like an old man because they are very good.
You're cheating the system. Back in my day, we didn't have extra toasty Cheez-Its. You had to dig in the Cheez-Its to find the few extra toasty. Now you kids can just buy boxes of them.
Oh, you know what? Just lean into it, sir. Lean into
There's
it.
There's room for all of it.
Lean
There's
into
room
it.
For all of the junk foods. For all of us.
All right. That wraps up Movie Talk. Let's go ahead and get out of here. I will go ahead and say Oscar-nominated screenwriter, Emily V. Gordon. You are fresh off of our collective action, so you can get back to work. What should folks be on the lookout for besides supporting you at the Emmys next January with your show Chippendales? Mm-hmm.
That's very exciting. I always tell people I like these days moves in silence. It's way better. So don't look for me. Don't look for me. Don't find me. I'll be there if I need to be there. Thank you so much. Love you guys forever.
You can find Emily V. Gordon maybe camping out at a mini golf place on the edge of town.
Don't need it. Don't want it.
Okay,
let's get
out of
here.
Emily's show is nominated. Her husband is nominated for best actor. She was a show that she produces. Welcome to Chippendales. If you haven't seen it, it's
fantastic.
On Hulu. Otherwise, she'll keep everything secret, but she's a very busy lady. Mark, you have anything coming up, sir?
Yeah, I'm going to be at the House of Comedy up in Seattle.
You're a stand-up? I didn't know this.
I do stand-up.
That's so fun.
I tell the jokes. Yeah. December 22nd and 23rd, I'm up there. So if this comes out before then that's where you can catch me. If not, I got Portland, San Diego, Boston, a couple other dates already lined up for early next year.
We should have said Emily V. Gordon, current actor, producer, former therapist, former comedy booker.
That's correct.
Oh, where at? Where did you
meltdown?
She booked a show called The Meltdown with Jonah and Camille and a venue called Nerd Belt.
Yeah. I did both of those a number of times towards the end of the run when I moved out here. But it was even back in the day when it was just like thriving and I was newer on the scene. What a cool place to go. Because I'd hit all the clubs and all that stuff. But just what a cool place to go in the back of this comic book shop right on Sunset Boulevard. And everybody was so nice. You just felt like you found this club. Not unlike meeting a Billie Jean and just hanging out in that basement. That's what that felt
like. Can I say something? I started that place. Thank you for getting that reference. That is literally...
We made the connection.
The basement scene is what I wanted that venue to feel like.
You, mission accomplished.
And now the internet knows. Wow.
Yeah, that was very important to me. That venue, that was like six, seven years of my life. Booking the show was 6 years. The whole thing was 7 years. I just talked to the owner of the store yesterday. We hadn't chatted in a little bit.
It was a safe place.
It was magical.
To try your nerdiest stuff for me anyway. Because like you could do Magic the Gathering. You could do a line at the Comedy Store. You could do a whole run at Nerdman. Really see what was funny, what was going to work with, the normies outside.
I do, Doug. I do dig that. Also, I will go ahead and say with the meltdown of it all is just listening to you guys talk about it now because I just watched it on the internet.
Like, you know what I mean? You never went.
No, I mean, I went to it after it was other things.
Sure.
But it wasn't while it was what you guys were doing with that. So it was just like when it was the show or when it was, you know, you guys doing that. And then, yeah, it was like.
We were lucky to get a TV show. We were very lucky to be able to make a TV show and to make it in the space. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
To make it in that space. It was not made for a television production, but we pulled it off.
Y'all made it happen. I will ask you anything TV show or like movie recommendations you want to give our audience. We always like people that have seen things. So
there is a Australian show that is on Peacock.
Yeah.
Yep. Or Paramount. Nope. Peacock. It's one of the P's. So sorry. Going to have to look that up. Called Colin from Accounts.
Nice.
And it is a romantic comedy television show that I was recommended by some of my British friends. And I love it more than anything. I will tell you the premise very quickly. It's two strangers who meet when the woman like the guy almost hits her with a car. The woman in response flashes her boob at the guy. Then he hits a dog and the dog is very injured and they have to figure out what to do with the dog together.
Oh.
That doesn't sound funny. It could not be funnier. It could not be more romantic. I love it. I love it so much. So I highly recommend Colin from Accounts.
I'm going to check that out. Yeah. I love that. I love
one of the P's.
He knows that I love British shows. I'll figure. I think it is Peacock.
I think it's Peacock.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. And I want to let everybody know, this was one that we've been trying to get done for a while. But if you have any wild recommendations, please email us at Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you find this one. Next week, we have a new episode, Mr. Mark. Which is it?
Yeah, we're going to ring in the new year with what else? I mean, the best New Year's movie of all time. No, it's not Sleepless in Seattle. It's New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
From 2011. It's the Gary Mark. We did the Valentine's Day. We're going to do Mother's Day. Why not do New Year's Eve? And
yeah.
We'll see if it holds up.
I mean, look, Gary Marshall assembled all of these movie stars because they liked him.
Yeah.
So we got to give it up for that.
And we love Gary Marshall and we love all of our listeners. Happy winter solstice.
Yeah.
And happy holidays and all that good stuff. And can't wait to chat with you all next year.
Thank y'all for listening. We'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye.